From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
All right, it is time for another episode of PDGA Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair, as always. Sarah, what's happening? How are you?
Not too much. It has been raining so much here that even if I wanted to get out and play disc golf, I couldn't.
That's unfortunate.
Disgusting. Yeah.
I actually played twice last week.
Did you?
Yeah, my dad was in town, so we got out for a couple rounds and... yeah, I had a nice little round going in our final round and then went triple bogey on the last hole because it's all mental. It's
all like, I'm
mental.
Doing hot. And then it,
No, you know what's mental? I've been trying to like practice putting a lot more too. And I was out in my yard and I have like my stack of 8 putters because that's what was out in the yard. And I am a hoarder. And I'll go 7 in a row and hit them all and then know that I need to hit the 8th in a row to, you know, be perfect from that distance and miss it every time. It's insane.
Can I make a plug for an informal plug? This is not an ad, but I think it could help you and maybe some of our listeners. Have you tried the Perfect Putt 360 app?
I have not tried the Perfect Putt 360
app. It's great. It's an app, like I said. So you use it on your phone and there's two. So you get, there's 5 stations and you get 10 discs at each state, 10 putts at each station. And obviously a perfect game is 360, but I've never seen anyone even break 300. So basically.
Like what's the distance?
So it starts at, I think it's 10, 15. I think it starts at 10. So 10, 15. 20, 25, 30. That's right. Yeah. So okay. One round is 100 putts. And if you make all of the putts at each station, then you get bonus points. So that's what really kills me. Yeah. So you can get like all your putts in at the 10 and 15 marks. And then you move back to 20 and you're like, I got this. And then you miss one of those and you're missing out on a bunch of bonus points. And then when you get back to 30 feet and there's some wind kicking up, it's extra hard. And then you've got, so it's 100 putts total between the 2 rounds for one game. And you can,
isn't it wild how much just like 5 feet can change your putting percentage?
I've missed some of the 10 footers and I'm like, I'm going to start over again, but it's cool because there's a leaderboard and you can share your stats and.
Ooh, all right. I've been thinking about like trying to put together an article for the PDGA website about like just how to make putting practice more fun. If we're being totally honest, the reason I don't practice putt is because it's
not fun.
And
no.
So
but this makes it more fun and it keeps you competitive because you're like, okay, this game I got 176. Next time I'm like, I really need to focus on my 30-foot putts so I can get those bonus points. I want to break.
All right, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna download this app, Sarah, and then we're gonna start a challenge between me and you and the listeners.
Okay.
So we'll get that going next week. This week we have plenty to talk about. PDGA Board of Directors member Mike Sullivan is going to join to talk about the new disciplinary policy. We talked about that a little bit last week. We're going to talk player awards, like not the awards that we gave out, the fake awards.
The real awards.
The real legit PDGA awards, the real awards, yeah. But first, Sarah, I just have to say, as a lifelong Tennessee Titans fan, I am super excited.
You are? Why?
About the Tennessee Titans.
I was like, what?
I'm not a lifelong Tennessee Titans fan. I'm just hopping on your Nashville football bandwagon,
man. You can take my place,
man.
Then. Someone has to.
I know. Gosh.
Well, I'm actually hopping on the Predators wagon. Sorry, Flyers. I still love you. But I feel like after 5 years of living here, I should... At least
hockey is the best sport to watch in person anyway. So
yeah,
big time. All right. Anyway, less football, more disc golf. let's talk, Sarah. It is ratings update day as we are recording this. How did you do on the ratings front? Did you even have an update?
No, I'm in my off season. I haven't played since I don't even know. October.
You know what though? I think this is the kind of year where cool, it's ratings update and it's kind of bonus, but like a lot of people really don't have
a lot of movement.
An update. Yeah. I'm not surprised. Like this was one of our, you know, I try and put out a thing on the PDGA social media. That's like, hey, how'd your rating go today? And this was one of our lower engagement days just because I think most people are hibernating.
I try to have a very intentional off season. So I'm currently in that right now.
There you go. That's good. All right. Well, then, you know, I guess I can't ask you about ratings updates, but I would like to hear from the listeners. If there are any listeners that had any really big ratings jumps, you know, and want to brag about it, we want to brag about you on the air. So radio@pdga.com is how you get a hold of us on the email. Or conversely, if you had a soul crushing ratings day and you're willing to go through some podcast therapy about it, also send us an email and we will try our best to console you. You know, that'll be how we do it. All right. So in some other news then, Sarah, let's do a little bit of a drum roll. This is where we need sound effects on the show. You sounded more like a Wookiee than a drum roll.
Thank you. I've been trying to work on my Wookiee sound for like 20 years. Thank you very much.
Oh gosh, we're not getting into Star Wars on this podcast. drum roll, please. We have awards, end of the year awards, player awards based on our PGA points. And I would like to announce that the Rookie of the Year in both we have the Men's Rookie of the Year, Women's Rookie of the Year, goes to Luke Humphries and Christine Jennings. And the Player of the Year goes to, and I am really, really shocked by this one, Paul McBeth and Paige Pierce. So congratulations to those winners in the awards. Now, it's kind of cool when we have Player and Rookie of the Year. You can go to this section on the website. It's under membership and you scroll down the Player and Rookie of the Year, and then it tells you exactly how these points are kind of qualified. And really a lot of it comes down to how you finished at majors and then, you know, NTs and international majors and then A tiers and so on and so forth. I was really impressed with, you know, seeing Christine Jennings and Luke Humphries at the top in each of their divisions, but not super surprised. Both of them were actually quite experienced amateur players. Luke Humphries won AM Worlds in 2018. Christine Jennings came in fourth at AM Worlds, but she won U.S. Women's in 2017 in the FA1 division. Obviously you're an Innova player alongside Christine. What do you know about her game that the people might need to watch out for in the future?
She's pretty well-rounded. She does a lot of practicing. She's not on the road full time. And she's very active on social media and has a YouTube channel now, and she's constantly putting out content, with her practicing routine. I know she's been working on her putting a lot in the off season. She's out in Ohio, so it's a little bit colder and sounds like similar weather to what we're having here in Nashville. So she posted the other day that she's been focusing on her putting. But yeah, she's got a pretty decent forehand. She's mostly backhand, I would say, and pretty well-rounded.
Yeah. I had a chance to talk to her today, just about, you know, winning the Rookie of the Year award and everything. And, I learned that one of the highlights of her year, among, you know, winning certain events, she won the Charlie Vetner Open, which she pointed out as her biggest win of the year. She ended up beating Jessica Weiss in kind of a rainy, sloppy kind of day, she said. Her highlight of the year was at Diglo, playing on the same card as Katrina Allen, who is like her disc golf idol. And she said that she doesn't fangirl for anyone, but she fangirls for Katrina Allen. And I thought that was
you know
really
why
fun.
That's funny is because Christine just said that same thing to me about 2 weeks ago when we were chatting. And I may or may not have passed that message on the cat a few days ago.
Well,
I was like, she probably knew. Well, yeah, I was like, you guys are both into working out. You should just meet up at the gym and do some workouts together. And so I'm hoping I made a tour connection there for the two of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so speaking of touring, like you mentioned, Christine isn't out as much. She has a full-time job. So she's kind of in your vein in terms of how often she gets out to play, but she travels a little further than you on the weekends. Like she's going out to like 7-8 hours away. She said she actually said Rookie of the Year was one of her goals for this year. So
she's younger than me. Mission accomplished. You know, she probably doesn't need a full 8 hours of sleep like I do. I can't do that anymore. My
age catches up.
Yeah, I think my weekend, the distance that I'm willing to travel now is maybe 5 hours, and that's stretching a little bit more too.
There's some kind of sliding scale of age versus distance to travel. Cause now
well,
I'm
depends
like,
on if it's 4 rounds and the tournament's going to end.
I'm driving 2 hours.
Yeah. If the tournament ends at 6 PM and I've got to drive 5 hours, like that's not fun at all. I've had to stay over in hotel rooms and then get back at my computer early
that
on Monday morning.
That is why they made coffee.
Yes.
So anyway, congrats to Christine Jennings. I had a nice chat with her. And then I also got to catch up with Luke Humphreys yesterday, who incidentally, if you closed your eyes, which I mean, I guess I was on the phone, so I didn't need to close my eyes, but I wasn't looking at him. If you didn't know, like if you did like a side-by-side taste test, but for voices, you could not tell Nate Perkins and Luke Humphreys apart. And it's funny because they travel a lot together in the season. But anyway, I could have sworn I was talking to Nate Perkins instead of Luke Humphreys. Hopefully I didn't get punked on that one. But I got to talk to Luke. It was really cool talking to him. His big thing was, you know, he was traveling on the road. He played a bunch of tournaments. And like, you know, as it goes with your first year on tour, it can be kind of rough. He had a really rough showing at the Green Mountain Championship. I think he came in like 46th place. And after that, he really committed himself to what he called, quote, emotionless golf. Like literally just having to do one shot at a time, move on, but more dedicated to it than, you know, you really, because everyone says that, right? But to be able to actually put it in practice is really difficult. So his finishes after Green Mountain this year, where did I write this down? Hold on, I'm scrolling. I have a document open. Sorry. Darn it. I can't find it now. Oh, here we go. Okay. So GMC was in September and he played 6 tournaments after that. He went 4th place, 21st, which that was USDGC. We'll give him a pass on that. 9th, 9th, 1st, 1st.
Nice.
So huge upswing at the end of the season after kind of making that mental shift. He, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, just signed a deal with Prodigy to play for them this coming season. So seems like a pretty good deal, for Prodigy. Now they got the Rookie of the Year in the bag. You know, both of these guys, when we say rookies, Christine's like 26, Luke is 32. They've played for a while. They played in the AM ranks for a long time, but really what makes you a pro is when you go and accept that cash. And neither of them did that until after AM Worlds last year. So keep an eye out for them and some other, you know, up and comers. You can see the full list. Obviously, Heather Young, Valerie Mondoano are on the women's side. Ezra Adderhold, Freddie Meza, some other kids on the men's side. Either way, we've got some good up and comers that you can keep an eye out for. And then we haven't even talked about the players of the year yet, Sarah. Who, I mean, are you even surprised? Paige Pierson, Paul McBeth? No, me either. 4th career player of the year award for Paige Pierce, 5th for Paul McBeth. So he now adds that to the same number of world championship titles that he has. Paige, I think right now is overseas. I haven't gotten to catch up with her yet, but I would imagine, you know, if you look at her season, she had like a 9 tournament winning streak in the middle there that, when she had European Open and Worlds and all that stuff. So really strong season for her. Going to be interesting to see what 2020 brings. McBeth, obviously, you know, going into the year, it was the, oh gosh, how's he going to do playing for Discraft? Because it was a big transition. And you know, he goes the first few tournaments, like a 10th place, a 4th place, a 6th place. And maybe people are a little like, maybe McBeth is human. And then he goes 18 under par at Waco and wins. And the rest is history pretty much. And he just dominated the whole year. His winning percentage, I think he won like 60% of the tournaments he played.
It's gross. That's the exact word I was going to say.
We say it because we're jealous.
Exactly.
And I did actually call him up and talk to him a little bit because more newsworthy No offense, Paul, you're winning things and that's newsworthy, but a little more newsworthy than him winning player of the year, which is relatively expected, is his current health status. Because if you follow along on the old social medias, he just put out a post, I think it was yesterday, so a couple days ago by the time we're talking about this, of his right foot in a walking boot with his dog looking at him. And so basically this injury that he had, it's been an ankle thing. He actually did it at Waco, ironically enough. And then it kind of went away and he kind of re-aggravated it, played it on it. And it was just nothing ever really healed, I guess. So his situation now is he's in this walking boot for a month and his doctor says, you know, no weight bearing, nothing. And he's still going to try and do, you know, he can do upper body training, but like, he's not gonna be able to throw drives. I suppose he could really like, he could putt a little bit if he wanted to, but he pretty much said to me, or actually here, I have a quote, this is in quotes, "I'm not too worried," is what he says. So he says he'll be good before the tour starts. He's still signed up for like Wintertime Open and Memorial. He didn't sound super stressed. And like, I remember when this dude was playing with like fractured vertebrae back in 2016. So like, you know, yeah, I'm not too worried about Paul either. Obviously I want him to get healthy because I think a healthy Paul Macbeth is a good thing.
Can I say, so my late grandmother would say this, that when you get sick or injured, it's the body's way of telling you to slow down. So sometimes it's better to, I mean, I've had injuries before that have laid me up for a few days and I'm like, you know what? I probably need this. And maybe, you know, resting and chilling out for a month isn't such a bad thing.
I did a very severe like ankle injury back in, I don't know, 2017 or something. And it sucked. And I had such a hard time like slowing down. So being in that boot for like a month is brutal. You said you were in a boot for like 6 months at one point,
right? Yeah, I've got, it's actually funny. This is kind of unrelated, but yesterday morning before Paul put out his announcement, I announced to my husband, Sean, that I thought that I had a, let me make sure I'm saying it right.
Peroneal
tendonitis, because I'm feeling, pain on the outside of my left foot. And I've had issues with that foot. I've got an accessory navicular bone. Look that one up. And so I've had a torn tendon over that. And that's why I was in a boot for 6 months, yada, yada, yada. Knee surgery on that side, blah, blah, blah. But so I announced this. I'm like, I think I have this. And then a couple hours later, Sean was like, what did you say you had? And I was like, oh, peroneal tendonitis. And he was like, look at Paul Macbeth's status. And I was like,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. I refuse to be in a boot though. I've got all these PT exercises that I'm going to do. I've got another leg issue that I'm dealing with that I just had x-rays on. So,
all right. Lots of Paul would not take it. Well, actually in his defense, I didn't offer it to him cause I knew he wouldn't take it. But when I had my ankle all banged up, and I say banged up, like I literally couldn't put weight on my foot for like 6 weeks. You know, you got those little like mobility scooters, like you see people out with a busted ankle and they'll be on the scooter.
Yeah.
I had that for a minute and it was awful. And so I actually went out and have you ever seen this thing? We're doing way too many plugs today. Have you seen this thing called the iWalk 2.0?
No.
It essentially looks like a peg leg.
Ooh.
And you should Google it right now while I'm telling you this story. Google iWalk 2.0 and you will see this thing. And it's this contraption that you strapped to your knee, and so your ankle is sticking out and off the ground, and you can walk. And so I actually got one.
That's amazing.
Like, I would walk my daughter to and from school in this. And people would look at me like I was
you're a pirate
person. And so this is really bad. One of my best friends was getting married, and I was in the wedding, and so we go up to the, and this was maybe like a week or two after I did this, maybe like a week after I did it. And so I walk up to like the rehearsal dinner and I have this thing on and his mom hadn't seen me in quite some time. And like from the angle she got it at, like she thought that I had had some terrible life altering injury and like had a prosthetic because it kind of looks like a prosthetic. And so I freaked her out a little bit, but I would recommend if you are someone who's going to have to be in a boot for a while and you just can't like stand being that immobile, iWalk 2.0.
There's a used one on eBay for $46.
I was going to say there's a used one in my garage.
Or you could pay $149 at Walgreens.
Yeah, I probably paid the $149, but yeah, if anyone needs it, feel free to shoot me an email and we'll work out a deal. I've kept it around because
just in case.
Honestly, it's
I might need you to mail that to me. Yeah. We'll see. I might need it.
You should try it. One thing I never tried. I don't think I tried to play disc golf on it.
Sounds dangerous. I'm
trying to think now. Yeah, it was awkward enough as it was just walking around. There were a couple of close calls. Anyway, Paul, hope you're on the mend and feeling better. I think it'll be I think he'll be okay. Hopefully he won't have to have the iWalk 2.0, but he knows how to get a hold of me.
And I sent him a message on Instagram this morning. So if you listen to this, Paul, message me back. Uh-oh. You're not in trouble.
Close your DMs, Paul. All right. Anyway, let's take a break real quick. We're going to talk to Mike Sullivan, and then we'll have a little more chatter after that here on PDJ Radio. All right. On the line now, we have PDGA Board of Directors member Mike Sullivan, also known as Sully. Sully, how's it going today?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Of course. Thank you. Main reason we're having you on is to talk about the recently updated PDGA disciplinary policy. For those who haven't noticed, the new policy went into effect on January 1st, and it's a pretty good departure from the prior disciplinary policy. I just want to read a little bit of background on it before we get into some of the nuts and bolts. But basically, the policy was workshopped by the PDGA Board of Directors staff and the disciplinary committee. And then, there was a lot of back and forth and feedback throughout the process. But basically, the primary goal is to increase transparency and accountability and bring up improved communication with PDGA members. It makes penalties more predictable, clarifies the ways that people can file actions, and basically just outlines the process a lot more smoothly, a lot more clearly. So I guess my first question to you, Sully, would be, what was the biggest reason for this change? What precipitated it?
So this is something I actually ran on, and it came to my attention when Bradley Williams was suspended, a very high profile, kind of a long suspension. There was a little pushback from the community. There was a lot of discussion on how we determine whether or not a suspension is fair. And I dug into the process. And what I saw was it was a little bit of a black box that, it says that there's internal precedence. It says that there's sort of an internal rubric for how long a punishment ought to be for certain offenses. But none of that information was public. And also, when someone was suspended, the reason why they were suspended also was not public. And so it was virtually impossible for members to hold the disciplinary committee accountable, like to see whether or not they were sticking to their own internal practices, because no one knew what the practices were. So I said, when I ran, what I was going to do is sort of bring in kind of classical notions of procedural due process. And that's, you ought to be able to have notice, and as much as you can, you ought to be able to have a hearing. You can't have a in-person hearing. But, we can present evidence and we can make it clearer how you can present evidence in your favor, make it clearer how you can report someone you think is, being nefarious on the course. And that the more open we are about this, the better of a tool it is in several ways. And also the more accountable we are, because we're a membership organization. And so accountability and transparency, those are things that we need to prize and really, really focus on. Does that make sense?
Yo, absolutely. Absolutely. Having been my own little cog in that particular disciplinary incident when I wasn't working with the PDGA, I remember it pretty well. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot to this policy. The biggest thing to me is at least that, you know, you've got different classes of offenses now laid out. You have anywhere from class A all the way down to class E.
That's right.
And if you work backwards on that, class E is, you know, the more common ones, administrative violations, not paying your fees, things like that. You have drug and alcohol violations, mm-hmm. Harassment, cheating, and then all the way up to physical assault or threat of physical harm.
Yeah.
That, to me, this being laid out is the biggest change. But is that also to you what you think is the most significant component of the new policy?
I mean, that's probably the biggest difference. I'm not sure if it's the difference that actually changes the internal workings the most, but it certainly is the difference that makes an interface between the membership and the process easier to understand. You know, I think if somebody gets suspended for a cheating or dishonesty type offense, you know, that probably ought to be known, right? If somebody is a physical danger to other players, that's probably something we should know about, you know, especially if that person then tries to say, show up to a PDGA event in another area under another name and is recognized. Like, people should, you know that, like, well, this guy's suspended for, you know, administrative things. He didn't pay his fees, so we just should politely, like, move him along. You know, TDs can tailor their handling of these situations better with more information. Does that make sense?
It definitely. And I think for players too, like you were mentioning. Now my question is, obviously, the you know, if we're looking at the current, I'm gonna pull up just the current disciplinary actions, mm-hmm. and you know, it doesn't quite look like on this form that things have gone in yet. Is it to be understood that on the next time there is an update to the current disciplinary actions, that there will be another column that lists the class of offense?
Yeah, we have not. So this is not a retroactive change. That's part of providing, you know, sort of, I mean, obviously we're not, I don't think, legally obligated to comport with constitutional notions of due process, but we ought to. And that's sort of, you know, and so if we ought to, another thing is that we should only apply the disclosure of class offenses going forward.
Okay.
People who operated under the old system were not operating under the understanding that that would occur. So, you know, it's early in the year. End of the year was quiet. I don't think we'll see, you know, class offenses for a little bit yet, but it'll all be going forward. We are not going to provide that information about past offenses under the old system.
I mean, how many cases would you say the disciplinary committee, give us a little background or whatever insights you can, that is, for members. How many cases are you guys actually handling per year?
I'm new as the sort of board liaison to that committee. I actually, since I was formally added after the summit, I don't think that we've had a new case to review. Now, the committee only reviews A through D. So there are plenty of class E suspensions, and that's all HQ handles that. You know, that's, you know, big dog and the staff there process those things. And all they do is just shoot us an email going, hey, these are the new class E offenders, so that, you know, we're putting them on the list, so the committee is aware of who's on the list. But I mean, when you look back over the offenses and you see all these 1 month plus or 6 month plus, which are basically all class E type offenses, you'll see that the vast majority of these cases are the administrative suspension. And, you know, I don't think that we see many class A's, you know? And I do think, however, that we might start to see a few more class C's than we normally do because of another change, if you don't mind, that I'd like to highlight.
No, for sure.
And that's that the old system had kind of a clunky case one, case two, case three, case four reporting system that I'm not sure it was particularly easy for anyone to understand. And, you know, I'm as someone who was an attorney for a big chunk of my adult life, even I sort of found it a little difficult to navigate. So what we've done instead is break it down into tournament director submissions and single event submissions. So this is bad behavior at one event. But the big one is pattern or practice. And that is ideal for instances where someone might be misreporting scores or pencil whipping, but intent is hard to prove, where they then go, oh no, that's just a mistake, let me fix that when they're caught. Or, you know, no, I definitely got a four, you know, I didn't get a five, you guys aren't thinking it through, it's definitely a four. And it's hard to prove that they're actually intentionally cheating, which is, you know, intent is the big qualifier for disqualification. And that's very frustrating for TDs when you kind of know, but you can't prove it. So what pattern or practice can do is say, we've got this person who's been doing this at multiple events, and we've got five or more PDGA members who have witnessed one or more of these events. And that then brings the person into the disciplinary process, because at a certain point, not getting your score accurately, whether you mean to do it or not, affects everyone else's game negatively. And it gets to the point where if you're not going to fix the problem, if you're not going to buy yourself some birdie beads or a clicker or something like that to keep track, if you really can't keep track, you got to just do it, or you know, we got to maybe not have you play events until you can learn how to do it. And I think that's been a frustration for a lot of our members. You know, one of the things that I get complaints about a lot is like, how can we report pencil whippers when we can't prove they're doing it on purpose? Well, the new process gives you the tools to do that.
Okay. Now, will the new style of submission or any of this process, will it change the type of punishment that's meted out? I know, you know, there's probation and there's suspension. Sure. Does any of that change?
What has changed is we've got, you know, I really can't speak to the, you know, the process prior to that, the sort of rubric was held in the committee's hands. And so what we've done is twofold. We've created sort of a schedule of, you know, punishment scales per offense. So each offense has sort of a standard punishment and a maximum punishment. We did not do any minimum punishments because I don't think that mandatory minimum sentencing is any more effective in disc golf than it is in the criminal justice system. So we always want some leeway to go downward. If someone goes, yes, I did it, here is my confession, I'm really sorry, this is my plan to make sure this never happens again. Well, you know, at a certain point, that might diminish the value of a long suspension when we think about how keeping this person in the game, you know, impacts other people and impacts other competitors, which is really the point of a suspension, is that, right? Is this person is harming the game in a way that they need to be told to step away for a while so that other people can participate in events without counting their strokes or worried like they're going to get punched in the face, right? So we didn't want a minimum, but we do have maximums. We don't want people to go overboard. A and B, the maximum is, you know, basically you can't play PDGA events ever. You do serious physical harm to someone, or you are stalking them, or you're sexually harassing someone, at that point, you know, it can get to the point where we just have to say that your privilege to play our events just can't exist anymore because you pose too much of a threat to the other players for us to keep you around. But I don't think that we've ever seen a case, at least I'm not aware of one, where that's the appropriate punishment. I hope we never do, you know? But I'm getting a little into the weeds here. Basically, what we've done is we've made very public, if you commit a Class C, this is the base penalty. If you commit a Class C while you're also completely hammered off a bottle of Everclear you've been pulling on the entire round, then that's an aggravating factor, and maybe you get a little more punishment. Or, you know, if you, you know, you committed an alcohol violation plus you shoved someone, well, that's a Class A with an aggravating factor of also drinking. So it sort of gives people the punishment bands. And I think telling people what to expect is important. We could have a long philosophical talk about the value of deterrence or the non-value of deterrence. But the fact is, to the point where we are going to have any value from deterrence, you need to make it obvious what the consequences are, right?
Definitely. So, you know, obviously this isn't a policy that hopefully, at least, isn't going to affect the majority of PDGA members.
Oh, no.
In terms of, you know, actual discipline. But in your estimation, why do you think a majority of members should at least take the effort to understand it?
Well, first of all, so that you can be empowered to report bad behavior. Even if only, say, a fraction of a percent of members ever are penalized by the disciplinary process, the bad behavior by that piece of a percent affects far more people. Having someone who's consistently breaking the rules, or who is, you know, like, I like a craft beer as much as the next guy, but if somebody on my card has been, you know, slamming a secret bottle of whiskey the entire time and
can't. What are you guys doing in Northern Virginia?
Northern Virginia? Who said anything about that? We play by the rules here, sir.
I'm just joking. I will... I'm sorry. I had to.
No, we play by the rules here. I'm just trying to think of hypotheticals. So, you know,
I know. I'm sorry.
It's hard to play with somebody who's severely intoxicated.
Of course.
Right? It's hard to play with somebody who thinks that sort of harassing other players gives them an advantage. You know, so far more people than the people penalized are affected by actions that fall into the disciplinary process. So understanding is important, not only to understand potential consequences for your own actions, but to understand how to protect yourself and your community from people who are doing nefarious things during tournaments and harming other people's competitive experience.
See, I'm glad we kind of got to that, because I think that's really it. This could easily be one of those things where it comes up on the PDGA website. Oh, new discipline policy, whatever. But really, it does have further reaching ramifications than just, oh, well, I follow the rules, so you know, maybe it doesn't affect me, but it definitely does affect people.
Yeah.
You know, going back to what you said at the beginning of the interview, you kind of ran on this, on transparency.
Yes.
And now this new policy is in place. That's got to be a pretty nice feather in your cap now. So, you know, what is your next high priority item then as a board member?
So on the front burner right now is, and you can see that we've sort of voted to move this idea forward. It was sort of in the initial phase at the fall summit. And you look at those meetings, you see that we are working on, and by we, I mean, some combination of myself and staff and Robert Leonard, Big Dog, Sean Sinclair, et cetera, on what is tentatively titled the Tournament Director Support Committee. And what that does is provide, and this is actually interesting because it ties into some of the comments I saw on your post on Facebook leading up to this interview. A lot of people were talking about live scoring and the need to get tournament directors sort of certified in live scoring. One of the functions of this committee would be to serve as sort of a clearinghouse and training center for tournament directors on things like how to enable live scoring, how to counsel people on getting into the live scoring app and adding their people on there, how to determine added cash properly, how to value player pack items properly, you know, best practices in marking out of bounds, you know, all sorts of things that I think we have wonderful volunteer TDs, and I won't say anything bad about the fantastic volunteers who put on our events. We need to do a better job setting them up to succeed. And so that is the number one purpose of the Tournament Director Support Committee. And probably another purpose of it will be, when people don't seem to get it, sort of how can we get these people to get in line with policies and understand why we do what we do and why we do things the way that we do things. And I'm very excited about this idea. I think it's kind of overdue. And I think that, you know, if we can craft this to be something, you know, that's very involved and that really just does the work, that it could be basically a limitless boon to the tireless volunteers who make this sport run.
I mean, what's the time frame for hopefully getting that up and running?
I'm hoping that we'll have an initial proposal to present at the Spring Summit in Emporia at the end of April.
Very nice. You know, I guess we can kind of talk a little bit then. We did put a little bit of a call out on social media to see what other kind of things people wanted to check in with you about. And yeah, the digital scorecard and the new scoring itself was a big topic of conversation. So, you know, in your experience, give me the breakdown of how things have been going with the digital scorecard. Do you see it being used often? What do we need to do as a staff to kind of educate people a little bit more, maybe, that it's a thing and that it can be properly used?
Yeah, I think we need to get some maybe some pieces and videos out there to really get tournament directors, first and foremost, to understand the massive amount of interplay between the information you can place in the tournament manager and the way that shows up on the digital scorecard. I'm not sure everyone is aware of the fact that you can customize a layout in Tournament Manager to show up on the digital score. So if you've got, say, I run I run an event every year that ends up having hot rounds on your show because it's at the end of the year. This year it was called Odds Number 12 Rice Properties Group's Duck Golf 37 presented by Westside Discs, which always seems to get a nice giggle out of you and Sarah.
I was gonna say, did you just memorize that? That's pretty impressive.
Well, it was my event.
There you go. Still,
so that event has six temporary holes on one of the two courses, and they're lettered A through F. And so not only can you add those through Tournament Manager on the layout, you can actually thread it. It's like we play 7 through 10, then A through F, then 11 through 18. You can actually customize all that. And on each one, you can put the distance, the tee, the basket. You can put OB notes that all pop up right on the scorecard when people are using them. I'm not sure how aware people are of the level of customizability we have there. Personally, I have been using digital scoring in one form or another since the original kind of alpha beta tests last January. Our league, the Brouhaha at Bluemont, which is our winter league in Arlington, Virginia, we were early testers there. And as soon as it was up and running and ready to go, I've basically used it at every tournament. And first, I had maybe like a 50% adoption rate. But once people saw that it eliminates math errors, that it gets the TD to get the scores up even faster. I mean, I had already sort of gotten fluid enough with Tournament Manager that I could have the scores up and the fees paid before I left the park. And now it's like, I don't even have to do anything. If you use live scoring, you certify that and it goes straight up onto the results page without me having to touch anything. Not only does that free me up to answer the endless, when is the second round going to start questions, or, you know, help serving lunch or whatever, or, you know, whatever I'm doing between rounds, but it also gets people's unofficial ratings up faster. And it just basically makes everybody happy. And at this point, I think I'd say I'm between 85 to 95% on any given tournament. I might have one card that doesn't want to have anybody's phone out, and that's fine. You know, we are required to provide paper scorecards, and I always provide paper scorecards. It's just that at this point, I print out maybe six of them instead of 20 of them, because I can tell from who's going to be at my tournaments that I'm going to have a lot of people who are enthusiastic about live scoring. So I'm saving paper. It's more efficient. People are happy. I love it.
I was going to say, is what do you see as the biggest impediment for that last, you know, 15, 20%? Is it the, I just don't want to have my phone as a distraction crowd, or is it more of the, oh, well, what if it rains? And I mean, what are the reasons that are maybe
that expressed having people to me, hold back? Expressed to me primarily is I don't want my phone as a distraction. You know, and I absolutely understand that. And for those people, I make sure I always have paper cards, because the biggest reason I throw tournaments is so people will have fun at them. And if I'm making you do something you really don't want to do, you're not having as much fun as you could. Right. So yeah, happy to do that, obviously. And, you know, hopefully everyone is aware that we are not making live scoring mandatory. I think probably, I won't say ever, because, you know, if 30 years in the future, we all have chips in our brains and can think our scores into it or whatever, then maybe that'll change. But
that's going to be hard to keep track down the pencil whippers that way.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're all on the same neural net, right? You should be able to figure it out.
You know, real quick, there were a couple other, you know, quick questions on the Facebook page, some more relevant to you, some not. But someone asked about an update to the age policy on juniors at majors. Obviously last year, the minimum age limit was bumped a little bit higher. I believe that we took out the like MJ6 and FJ6.
Yeah, basically said that you have to be
eight
or older to be in majors. This was done on advice from our youth and education folks. You know, both I think both Jay and Des Redding, who both great educators, Hall of Famer disc golfers, said that, you know, eight is really when it starts kind of clicking for kids to be able to go through something like a major. And, you know, I've got kids myself, and I'll tell you that I have an almost 7-year-old who, you know, had a little trouble making it through 18 holes of league on her PDGA debut last week.
Sure.
So I can understand. I mean, obviously one anecdote does not extrapolate to data. But, you know, when we hear this from people like Jay and Des and our youth and education folks, I think it was an important change. I, you know, it affected a few people, but I think that we settled up with them. But I think the question was, it says that we'll evaluate it on a year-to-year basis.
Correct.
Well, at what point are we going to evaluate that? The answer is, I can make an educated guess. That is a majors NT working group item. I don't sit on that. I sit on, you know, discipline and on the competition committee that does the competition manual. As I understand it, some point this spring, we will have a majors NT summit where staff and the majors NT working group would probably discuss issues like that for future years. So
it's actually next week.
Is it? Okay, great.
I happen to be going to it. Yes.
Awesome. Well, I did not get the invite.
I don't know if it's, I don't know if that one's on the agenda quite yet, but I know, I mean, obviously I think it kind of comes down to, you know, like you said, how many people it does affect. You know, if you have a junior in the house and everything like that, I will let you know if you're listening. You know, I will run it up the flagpole and see what the current status is so I can report back on that. Cause that's, you know, it's helpful to know if you're trying to plan out your summers for the next couple of years and you want to know if you're going to be able to get your kids out to our junior majors, that's important. So,
right. Absolutely. And, you know, if it's brought up at the majors NT summit and they sort of say, maybe we should take a look at this, I'd imagine we'd discuss it at the spring summit as well.
There you go. And then, you know, one more question before I let you go. And this is, it's kind of circles back to the disciplinary policy a little bit. One of the, you know, there's kind of an anecdote, an example in the article that you wrote up for this, in which Perry Pencil Whipper is consistently suspected of altering scores. And now you gave a presentation at the summit that had various examples as well. I would like to, and it had some other names. I don't recall what they were off the top of my head, but I want to know, what is your favorite fake rule breaker name that you've come up with?
Oh man. So all of these are basically, this is what you get when you go to law school and then have to take the bar exam, is that that's where all these horrible, alliterative, self-describing names come from,
right.
You know, I think I did, oh God, that's a really good question because I have done a lot of stupid names, but I think that I liked Randy Roller that we did at the summit because it also sort of sounds like maybe somebody's like disc golf stage name, you know?
Yeah.
Like he was born, you know, Eugene Bogdanovich, but he goes by Randy Roller when he's out there on the course. You know, I think, but Perry Pencil Whipper is probably a close second.
That one's pretty good.
It's actually based on my contracts professor had endless, he would do a case system with us and every memo that we would get each week for class study would come from Perry Paralegal. So that's where Perry Pencil Whipper comes from.
Nice. Anything else that we didn't touch on regarding the policy that you think people should know?
I think that we've basically covered it all. If anybody has feedback and suggestions, obviously, you know, I'm not so arrogant to think that we've made this as perfect as it possibly can be. I think that we've made it really, really good. But if people see any problems or anything they think isn't properly addressed, please let Robert and I know, and we will, we're always going to endeavor to make the best process we can.
Yeah. And there's a staff or a board of directors, contact form on the PDGA website. And, most of these guys, if you're in the game, are fairly active on social media. You can probably track them down if you need to, but the proper way is, you know, go through the PDGA website. So, all right. Well, hey, Sully, thanks again for joining us. And hopefully we'll be catching up with you more soon.
Yeah, thanks for letting me ramble, Steve. I'll talk to you soon.
Always, man. All right. That was PDGA Board of Directors member Mike Sullivan. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio.
Now that some of our top players are out of the winter hibernation, we have some hot rounds to present to you. See if I remember how to do them correctly. So the fifth hottest rated round. I know I almost messed that one up. The fifth hottest rated round. Callie McMorrin played in the Shelly Sharp Memorial presented by Spinners on the Green, out in Arizona. She shot a 958 her second round and took second place. A new name on the hot rounds list, I believe, Chrissy Fountain played in the Dynamic Discs Presents Straddle the Brazos in Texas. She shot a 960 rated second round to take fourth place. A friend of mine, Katka Bodova, played in the Sizzlin Saigon Winter Open 2020. She shot a sizzling 970 her second round to take first place. Lisa Fakus also played in the Straddle the Brazos. She shot a 975 second round to take first in that event. And the hottest rated round for the weekend was Jennifer Allen. She also played in the Shelly Sharp Memorial, and she shot a 982 her first round to take first place. So congratulations to Jennifer.
I was going to say, I think she usually wins that event, right? If I recall correctly, she did last year.
Yeah.
A lot of action out at the good old Shelly Sharp Memorial. I wonder if, I haven't seen any video from that yet. I know sometimes Terry Miller records that one, but
oh, yeah, that's right.
I haven't seen anything yet. Actually, quite a few of the men's hot rounds also come from the Shelly Sharp. We've got two players at 10:51 to start us out. One of those from the Shelly Sharp, that is Anthony Barella. And let's see here. That was his. We have some problems here on the hot round list because I don't see that on his three rounds. But I don't know. Not sure what happened. Maybe it just got put in wrong. Either way, he was a 10:46. So maybe we have a couple extra ones. 10:46 from Anthony Barella is the fifth hottest rated round. Apologies for our technical difficulties. And that means the next hottest rated round was from Charlie Goodpasture. This was out at the Sun King / EDGC presents the Estero Open V. That's five. I know, people. Driven by Innova. This is out in Estero, Florida. And Charlie, that was his final round, and he won that event by two strokes. So he needed that hot round. Nicely done, Charlie Goodpasture. All right. With a couple 10:56s out at the Shelly Sharp, we had Drew Gibson and Terry Roethlisberger. And actually, these are, you know what? I'm wondering if between the time that we put in the hot rounds on our list and then our recording now, maybe there's an officializing or something, because
I have
different numbers here. Either way, it's all good. Drew Gibson, 10:59. Terry Roethlisberger, 10:59. Terry came in fourth. Drew came in second, and that was both in their second round. Let's see here. We've got James Bergman, and this is at the Battle by the Beach out in New Smyrna Beach, Florida, home of 49ers running back Raheem Mostert. I just learned this weekend. I know I'm speaking a different language to you, Sarah. This is a 10:65 rated second round, and James won that tournament, so nicely done. With a 10:63... out at the Shelly Sharp Memorial, this was Adam Hammes's final round, and he won that event by six strokes, picking up where he left off at the end of the year. Adam Hammes, nicely done. And our hottest rated round, this is a 10:73 rated opening round out at that same event out in Estero, the Sun King EDGC Estero Open. It was Randon Latta with a 10:73 opening round, but he ultimately came in second place to Charlie Goodpasture. Those are the hot rounds. I'm glad we got them back. I'm glad people are out playing. It's we're only a couple weeks out, really. Like, we're like a month and a half out, I guess, now from the proper start of the season, Sarah. And with that, you have a little bit of news on one of the up and coming players who we talked about last year. What do you got?
Yes,
on Heather Young.
Yeah, Heather and I had lunch yesterday, and she was giving me some of her tour stops for this year. And, you know, I've played with her several times in Tennessee, and I didn't think that she had traveled too far to get to some events previously. And so I was like, oh, is this, you know, she was throwing out like Texas and Florida. And she said that she has never flown to a disc golf event before. So that's a first. And then I believe she said when she flies to Florida, she'll be flying alone. And she's only flown one other time in her life. But she doesn't seem really nervous. She's just like, I'm super excited. And
she doesn't look like she even gets nervous. Yeah.
Yeah. No, she's super chill. But I was just like, just read this. You know, every airport's different. Just read the signs. Just follow the signs. That's all you need to do. So the biggest stops on her tour list are the Waco annual charity event, Disc Golf Pro Tour. And then she said she was very excited about playing Throw Down the Mountain. She was asking my husband, Sean, about hole 18. It's extremely uphill. And I guess, I haven't been to that course, but I guess it's not as uphill as it looks, apparently. So, and then she's playing Jonesboro. She's making it out to Worlds in Ogden, Utah. Then Great Lakes Open, Idlewild, Ledgestone, Maple Hill, Green Mountain Championship, Delaware. So basically all the Disc Golf Pro Tour events.
Couple NTs.
Worlds,
in.
Yep. Delaware, Disc Golf Challenge, Music City Open, and then a few A and B tiers.
Nice.
From there. So
she's an exciting young player to watch, man. I'm really excited to see you know, more of her progress this year. And Lefty. So that's always fun as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the more, again, like just having more top women pushing the other top women out there is, I think it's going to be significant as these, you know, tours and seasons continue to develop. So good stuff. Looking forward to seeing how Heather does this year. And then Sarah, before we close the show, you have your customary plug to make. What do you got for us?
I don't do it every show.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's all like 90% of the show.
We'll make it a segment.
That's fine. It's what we're here for.
So registration for my annual Ladies and Gents Mixed Doubles event is opening on February 1st. And I'm trying to get all of my planning done. And with that comes sponsorships. So if you are a company or an individual who would like to donate cash or merchandise, all of the proceeds from this event go to the South Carolina Cancer Alliance. To date, I just added this up, we have raised over $15,000 over the past 6 years for the South Carolina Cancer Alliance through this event. It's a Throw Pink event. And yeah, and I actually just, my husband and I just built a website. It was a long time coming. I needed one place to put all of the stuff, and you can go to ladiesandgentsdoubles.com, and there's a link about being a sponsor, and you can look at all of the other information out there. So please hit me up on the contact page if you're interested in being a sponsor.
Sarah, did you make this on Angel Fire or something?
No.
I'm just kidding. I haven't even looked at the website yet. I'm just giving you a hard time.
It is WordPress. It's a legit website.
WordPress is great. I love it. Yeah. I really just wanted to get
Angel Fire.
That's GeoCities. Funny. Anyway, yeah. I'm showing my age today. All right. That's one more quick plug. If you have a junior disc golfer in your family or friends circle, and they are planning on going to any of our majors this year, Eagles Wings Disc Golf is doing their junior grant again in 2020. You could find more information about that over in the announcements section on the PDGA website. Or you can just go to eagleswingsdiscgolf.com. And that's a really great program. They help offset some of the travel costs and some other bonuses for the kids. So hit up that and, you know, spread the wealth and the love to the kids. All right, Sarah, I think that is going to do it for this week's show. We're keeping them short and sweet in the off season. Thank you again to Mike Sullivan for stopping by. And thank you to all of you for listening. If you've got feedback or want to leave us a review, do both of those things. First, feedback, radio@pdga.com, or just, you know, tweet at us at PDGA and I'll see it. And if you would love to help us get the show to more people, leave a review over on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, 4 stars, definitely not 3, 2, or 1, or 0. And, you know, share the show with a friend. I'm sure you've got some other disc golfers out there who want to bring the soothing sounds of our voices into their life.
Yes.
I haven't even had coffee this afternoon, Sarah, and I'm on one today. So,
I've had 2 servings of coffee, so I got you.
I mean, I had 2 this morning. They're just still working.
Okay. Well, now then I've caught up to you.
Exactly. Perfect. All right. Tell your friends who love coffee that basically this show is just like mostly we talk about coffee and then occasionally disc golf.
Yes.
And
exactly.
It's a crossover show. All right. Anyway, that's enough ranting. Thank you for listening. For Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we will talk to you next week.